Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. It's time for feast days and festivals in Louisiana. Irish chef Matt Murphy takes us back to the Emerald Isle for a real St. Patrick's celebration. Before opening his new restaurant, Born, Chef Brian Landry lived with the Islaños people of the Canary Islands. Brian illustrates for us the culinary ties we share with them here in Louisiana. And the Crescent City Farmers Market wants us all to experience the Sicilian St. Joseph's Altar tradition at their Grow with St. Joe event. We're taking you on a long trip, yet never leaving home, this week on Louisiana Eats. Before opening his new restaurant, Born, Chef Brian Landry traveled to the Canary Islands to immerse himself in the authentic food of the Islaños people. Brian, welcome back to Louisiana Eats.
Thank you for having me.
First, would you explain where the Canary Islands are?
Sure. They are a group of seven islands owned by Spain, but closest to the north coast of Africa, so closest to Morocco.
And why Islaños food for your new Hyatt Regency Hotel restaurant?
Well, some people are aware, but many are not, that Southeast Louisiana was originally settled by Spain, but Spain did not use mainlanders to settle that stretch of land, which is now St. Bernard Parish. They actually used people from the Canary Islands to defend against British invasion. The bigger part of it is actually that during that time, the Canary Islands were producing what was considered the best wine in the world. And so Spain levied a blood tax on the Canary Islands. So if the Canary Islands wanted to continue to export their wines to Europe, Spain made them send X number of people for every ton of wine that they exported. So that's how they used the Canary Islanders to settle Louisiana.
Incredible story. I didn't know that.
Yes.
So what were the similarities that you discovered in the food of the Islaños?
One of the things I think you find is a lot of it's actually lost in translation. You know, people are very familiar with the French side of Creole cuisine, but maybe not so familiar with the Spanish side of it. But if you think it's not too far of a stretch, dishes like jambalaya are very similar to paella, and Natchitoches meat pies would be very similar to empanadas. So there's lots of dishes that maybe originated with the Spanish influence, but over time, with the influence of African cuisine and French cuisine and Italian, you don't necessarily see the direct link right away, which is why we decided to go find it.
So this particular regional food was a new point of interest for you?
Very much so. I had been at Galatoire's for the last 6 years and steeped very well in the French side of Creole. And with an opportunity to open a new restaurant, I thought it would be a great opportunity to go learn more about some of the other influences that now make up Creole cuisine.
Well, I have to admit, I envy you that delicious trip that you took. And tell us a little bit about your experience living among the Islaños.
So I actually was accompanied by some gentlemen and ladies from St. Bernard who now run the Islaño Society. And they had been multiple times to the Canary Islands, and that was my contact to set up all the stages we did. We spent about half the time in people's homes cooking with them and a lot of time in restaurants learning how the food would be prepared and served in restaurants there. So we got a very well-rounded look at what it's like to eat the food from the Canary Islands, both in houses and in restaurants.
And what did you learn? Tell me about the ingredients and the dishes. What was new and surprising to you?
One of the things we come across, we talk about the Thais, you might not see it first, is basically their national dish is called punchero. Here, we would probably call it caldo. But what it is it's the vegetable soup we all grew up eating that typically had meat or pork in it. And so the punchero there was made with goat and pork and chickpeas and sweet potatoes and green beans and cabbage and white beans and all these great vegetables. And it's almost exactly to the vegetable soup my mom and grandmother made for me when I was growing up. But we wouldn't use chickpeas. We would use white beans and maybe not the sweet potato, but we'd use white potato. But things like that, you see the direct connection to right away. The other thing I found really interesting there is the cheese production and the wine production there are outstanding. Some of the best in the world. They win all kinds of competitions. And that's why we now feature one of the Canary Island goat cheeses on the menu at Bourne.
I was curious about that. That was one of my questions that I would like to know. The creamy Canary Island goat cheese a la plancha with mojo verde sauce.
Yes.
Really caught my attention. It's beautiful. It's delicious. That goat cheese comes from the Canary Islands.
It does. And it's an aged goat cheese. So it's not soft like most people would originally associate with a goat cheese. It's cured, so it does have a little bit of texture to it, and that's what allows us to grill it. And then we serve it with two sauces, the mojo verde, which is like a garlic parsley oil for all practical purposes, and then the mojo picante, which we make with red peppers and piquillo peppers and garlic and olive oil and a touch of vinegar.
It's such a bright, colorful plate.
Yes.
When it comes out. And since we're talking about the menu, another one of the dishes, fried P&J oysters almondine, tastes like it jumped right off the Galatoire's menu. So how did your tenure there inform your cooking today?
Oh, very much so. My time at Galatoire's definitely influences how I cook now. I was there for 6 years. P&J oysters were the sole supplier at Galatoire's for a long time, so I have a great relationship with Al and Sal and Mary, and now that I'm at Bourne, we have access to Covey Rise Farm. So that particular dish, we use the Bloomsdale spinach that Covey Rise provides us with, a very simple brown butter vinaigrette with fresh lemon juice, fried oysters, toasted almonds. Those are the fun dishes because they're simple. Not a lot of ingredients, not a lot of fuss, but they are absolutely delicious and fresh and wonderful.
I know you are a Louisiana native and you grew up down here. Did you have any exposure to the Islaños people growing up?
Not particularly. One of the things I like to do is I like to find the historical roots of things. And even like, for example, going to culinary school. I had been cooking in New Orleans with people like Kevin Vizard and Larkin Selman, and I learned lots of great technique, but I didn't necessarily know where it came from. And so going to culinary school helped put things in perspective for me. Now, 10 years later, and I have the opportunity to write menus and create dishes, a lot of that's the same way is you see dishes on menus over time, and maybe you can execute it, but where did it come from and what are the roots to it? So a lot of what Bourne is about is filling that niche and trying to find the historical tie to it. And that's why you'll see a lot of dishes that used to be on great New Orleans restaurants, which are no longer with us, whether that's because of hurricane or just time. Places like Brunings and Fitzgerald's and Mandich and Uglesich's, they had all these great little dishes that I love to eat, but you can't find them anymore. So that's an opportunity to kind of recreate a dish that used to be a staple in New Orleans cuisine that you don't necessarily see anymore. A lot of those dishes just tie us back to maybe what we grew up eating or your parents grew up eating, even your grandparents grew up eating. And I enjoy that. That's one of the things Galatoire's taught me about, you know, sticking with tradition, but also remaining relevant throughout the years. It's a tightrope. You got to figure out how to walk.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk with us.
Thank you for having me.
Chef Brian Landry of the new restaurant, Born. Don't get more Irish than Dublin-born chef Matt Murphy. Matt's here to help us celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Matt, welcome back to Louisiana Eats.
Great. Glad to be on.
In the last year, you have opened up your own restaurant, the Irish House, and this is a very ambitious project that is basically open 7 days a week, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Now, I know that the Irish House is such a family effort. What part does your wife, Alicia, play there?
Well, we try to have this flexi time, and we knew the two of us had to work, so she's actually working the back of house, you know, and I'm kind of out there in the kitchen, of course, and the operation side of it. So she calls the tune, and I have to play it. She coordinates a lot from the gift store to the front of house scheduling and a lot of the logistics that when you're, you know, as a chef, you're coordinating a lot of the cooking and the immediate things that are going on. So we're basically a team working on it together.
Well, y'all make a terrific team. Let's talk about St. Patrick's Day. What are some of the misconceptions that you think Americans have about how the Irish observe that day?
I think back home, you've always heard that, you know, St. Patrick saved Ireland. He brought religion to it, stopped worshipping stones and the lunar calendar and all this whatever, you know?
Yes.
So that's what we learned, that St. Patrick, he drove the snakes out of Ireland, which is, you know, the snakes were the devil, right?
Right.
He crushed them and sent them back into the ocean, you know? And as kids, we're sitting in class and we're hearing this and that's it, you know? We're let's celebrate St. Patrick. He saved us all.
More than just a Catholic hero, I suppose he's like a national hero.
National hero, you know? Everybody has their snakes in their life, whether it's alcohol, the cigarettes, or whatever they're doing, you know? So yeah. St. Patrick's probably, you know, one of the, you know, you look at
he's
that.
He's still busy.
He's busy still.
Any special foods in Ireland that you relate to St. Patrick's Day celebrations?
Not really growing up. I know we would always have an Irish stew. You know, it was still like kind of cold, not like right now when it's record temperature around the world. It was always cold. But we would always have fish on Fridays. You hear corned beef and cabbage here in the US, whereas they call it bacon and cabbage back home. Uh-huh. Or a nice roast of a ham. I guess it was more like you have Christmas where you have a big meal, and which was our Christmas is similar to Thanksgiving. But when you get to St. Patrick's Day, it's a little lesser. It's that event in between Christmas and Easter. Mm-hmm. So you would have probably, you know, a meal out, you know. The biggest one that put me in contact was playing for New Orleans Rugby Club, you know.
Ah.
And then not alone being a crazy Irish rugby player, that also being part of the team, you know, oh, you know that Irish guy. And then someone, oh, you know this Irish person. And we ended up. I ended up meeting a lot of different people like that. And even through Jamie Shannon, you know.
Yeah,
he considered himself Irish too, especially, you know, being from New Jersey and stuff and that whole region up there.
That's fantastic.
You got the same hell as me, you know, an Irishman cooking? What?
What are some of the authentic elements of Ireland that you have found lacking in New Orleans and you're maybe trying to make up for at the Irish House?
Well, one of the things in Ireland, I grew up beside Kiltory na hÉireann, which is an Irish society that was all about theatre, music, and a gathering place where a lot of the culture was. In New Orleans, we're so big into culture. And you think if the Irish community that came here has done so much, that was one of the things I thought was lacking. And there was an opportunity there to build something.
So that Irish House, it's a whole cultural center. And
exactly.
I'd like you to tell us, how will you be celebrating St. Patrick's Day this year?
St. Patrick's Day this year will probably be up early in the kitchen, like every holiday occasion. And I'll probably be right in the thick of it, making sure that everybody that's either going to St. Patrick's Cathedral and on their way to the parade and they're stopping off at the Irish House for breakfast, gets fed in a timely and fast manner. And then making sure that, you know, like everything, that we have a great celebration our first year and have a blast.
Well, I'm sure you will, Matt. And I am so grateful that you took the time to come talk with us on Louisiana Eats to help us celebrate that big day. Thank you.
You're welcome. I love it.
New Orleans' own Irishman, Chef Matt Murphy. It's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The correct answer to last week's question, what starchy tuber was responsible for the Great Irish Famine of 1845, is the potato. Although the mid-1800s were the time of greatest immigration, enough Irishmen already called New Orleans home by 1809 to hold the first public St. Patrick's Day celebration in the Crescent City. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
Well, whether you slice, dice, bake, or boil them, potatoes are bound to make an appearance at any Irish-American event. And if your household is anything like my Irish mother's, they're served up alongside a hearty portion of corned beef and a sprinkle of Catholic guilt. Hats off to this week's winner, Ms. Anna Arshad of New Orleans. May the road rise to meet you on St. Patrick's Day.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what classic Louisiana dish did Andrew Zimmerman and I cook up together at the Crescent City Farmers Market? Send your answers to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what classic Louisiana dish did Andrew Zimmerman and I cook up together at the Crescent City Farmers Market? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to LouisianaEats at wwno.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. On the eve of St. Joseph's Day, the Crescent City Farmers Market community will celebrate the patron saint of workers, families, and social justice with a locavore St. Joseph's altar. Joining us is Market Director Emery Van Hook. Hi, Emery.
Hi, Poppy. How are you?
I'm great. For listeners who might not be familiar with this tradition, would you explain the St. Joseph's altar?
Of course. So all around New Orleans, at churches and in homes, people will erect these gorgeous altars that are decorated with breads, often in the shape of Christian symbols. They'll have fish sometimes, gorgeous cakes, all of these things to honor St. Joseph and to thank him for saving the Sicilians back in the Middle Ages from famine.
And since it's in the middle of Lent, it's always no meat. It's strictly a vegetarian sort of event, right?
Exactly.
So why are you all hosting this event?
Well, St. Joseph being the patron saint of families, workers, and social justice, it seems like the perfect occasion to celebrate his feast day. A lot of the work that we do has a lot in common with what he's honored for. A lot of our community programming at the Crescent City Farmers Market, whether that's for children or mothers, families, and also honoring the work and ensuring the dignity of labor of the farmers and fishers who sell at the market.
Describe what the experience is going to be like.
Sure. So we'll host the event at Bittersweet Confections, Cheryl Scripter, who many will remember as a vendor at the Crescent City Farmers Market, opened a gorgeous new shop on Magazine Street, just across the street from our downtown location. Some of the bakers who sell at our markets will bake cakes and bread for the altar, so you'll be able to see the altar. And Domenico Restaurant is kindly providing pasta Milanese, which is the traditional dish, vegetarian, of course, like you said, served at these altars. And we'll have Italian wines. And Oren Hesterman, who's coming to town, a very special guest. We're thrilled to have him. We'll be there signing copies of his new book.
Who is Oren Hesterman, for people who might not be familiar with him?
Oren Hesterman is a rock star in the field of farmers markets and food security, and he's just written a book called Fair Food, Growing a Healthy, Sustainable Food System for All. So he's coming to town to do some work with us, and we're lucky that we were able to lure him to town just a little bit early to attend the event and be there to sign books and chat with all of us.
Well, Louisiana Eats will be there with you, Emery, and I'm looking forward to it.
We're thrilled to have you all there. Thank you.
Emery Van Hook, Crescent City Farmers Market Director. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us on Friday, March the 23rd, for a live taping of Louisiana Eats. Our special guests are Lynn Rosetta Casper of The Splendid Table and Road Foods' Jane and Michael Stern. Visit WWNO.org for more information. Next week, learn about a secret farm that once existed near the racetrack at the fairgrounds.
I had so much fun in that place. That was my playground. When the races would leave for the summer, the infield would grow wild and crazy. And before the turf track came, there was a ditch. I used to catch crawfish in the ditch.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at WWNO.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe, and the Bourbon House, Leitzegan Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cookin' Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to Thomas Walsh, our associate producer and sound engineer. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.